You don't have to hear that sort of level of success. I mean, surely you couldn't have anticipated that when you first put it together.
No, this whole thing was a hobby project that I did, kind of, like I said, kind of almost on a dare.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Ray, and welcome to the RayWenderlich.com podcast. In this podcast, we'll keep you up to date with the latest app development tech talk. Now, here are your hosts, Nick and Jake.
Hey, what's up, everybody? This is Mick Pringle, and welcome back to the official RayWenderlich.com podcast. I'm joined, as usual, by my co-host, Jake Gunderson, and today we're going to be talking about the popular GPU image framework with its creator and maintainer, Brad Larson. Hey, Brad, thanks for joining us.
Oh, it's an honor to be here.
Before we get into sort of the main conversation, I was wondering if you could tell our listeners a little bit about who you are and how you first got into Objective-C.
Sure. So my day job is I'm the co-founder and CEO of a company called Sonoplot, which is a company that builds robotic systems for dispensing liquid on the micro scale for fabricating microelectronics, biological diagnostic tests, things of that sort. And our robotic systems are actually driven by COCO-based control software that I write. They use IMAX as control computers. And so that's kind of how I got into doing COCO development. My background isn't really in programming. My undergraduate degree is in chemical engineering and my PhD is in materials science. So programming's always been a means to an end for me. And so we were building these machines and we needed to have control software for them. And we were building some kind of generalized stuff and realized that we couldn't support every platform at once. So we actually went and evaluated each platform, Windows, Mac, Linux, to see which provided the best development environment for us, and found that COCO really let us get much more done in a shorter period of time than any other platform we tried. So we converted our entire company over to Macs when we hadn't been using them before, and haven't looked back. It's been a great advantage for us to be able to be nimble and evolve software quickly. And it also kind of led us into, we switched this over 8 years ago. And so I was there in the early days of iOS development, looking at that, and had one of the first applications on the iOS App Store in an open source application called Molecules that I wrote, that's a molecular modeler. And the success of that and just how well that did, just kind of, spinned off into other things that I ended up tinkering with in the open source space. I was an initial contributor to the Core Plot framework. I'm one of the 17 elected moderators on Stack Overflow, and so it's just been kind of a fun little hobby on the side to tinker with some of this stuff. In addition to GPU image, which is kind of my latest hobby project on the side.
That sounds really, really interesting. But and one question that I'm going to have to ask before we move on. You mentioned that all of the control software is written and run on iMacs. But I'm just wondering, since sort of the more powerful iPhones and iPads that get released every year, have you thought about porting? Is it possible to port that onto the iPads or iPhones? Or is that something you were looking at?
Yeah, it is. It's an area that we're examining for our robotic systems are fairly large. They're about 150-pound systems. Let's just say the cost of them kind of dwarfs the cost of the iMac. So, to date, we haven't looked at smaller control computers, but we're actually examining doing kind of a lower-end system that might use something like an iPad to go and control them and to work with them. We just want to make sure that we have the appropriate precision and that the user interface makes sense for a more technical user. Whereas, mouse and keyboard allow you a lot of degrees of input, and just want to make sure that a touch interface is still going to let you do the things you can do. But all of our control software, could be brought across very easily.
Okay, that makes sense. Now, I'm not sure if you're aware, but they've actually published sort of a couple of tutorials on the RayWenderlich.com site that have sort of focused on GPU image or evolved around GPU image. One regarding real-time blur effects back when it wasn't available as part of iOS 7. Apple were doing it, but they didn't provide any sort of API for third-party developers to do it. And the other one was sort of evaluating the different options available for image processing on iOS. But for anyone that hasn't had a chance to read through those or had a chance to play around with GPU image or perhaps hasn't even heard of the framework. Could you walk us through exactly what GPU image is and sort of what your motivation was for putting it together in the first place?
Sure. It's a BSD-licensed open source framework for GPU-accelerated image and video processing for Mac and iOS. The goal of it was to kind of wrap a lot of the more complex operations in OpenGL ES for processing images, and provide that with a simple, you know, easy to use Objective-C API. It is nominally a competitor to Core Image, but the two are complementary in many ways, which we can talk about later on. And at the time that I put it together, you couldn't do things like custom kernels on in Core Image on iOS. That's now a new thing with iOS 8. And although on the Mac, you've had custom kernels, you know, from the beginning with Core Image. And so I wanted to bring that kind of a functionality, that kind of flexibility to iOS, and then eventually, you know, by demand to the Mac. And I'd been doing some tinkering on machine vision work and GPU accelerated processing in the software that we have on our robotic control systems. So I wanted to, you know, tinker with bringing that across and bring it to these platforms. So it was driven by that, but one of my primary goals of the framework has been to provide GPU-accelerated machine vision. Some that Core Image is used for image processing, video processing. I want to go beyond that. I want to go to more of the tasks like object recognition and image processing and some of the more interesting things that we just don't have the capabilities to do right now. And so that's an end goal for it. But the whole project actually started out of a conversation that my friend David Kinney and I had at WWDC, oh boy, I think it was back in 2010, where he was at the time starting up a brand new development conference called SecondConf. And we were talking about, I'd just come out of a seminar for doing OpenCL processing, and we were talking about the potential for doing accelerated image processing only on mobile devices. And so he challenged me to kind of put together a talk for that. And so I stupidly committed to one and had to spend the summer learning the OpenGL ES shading language and pulling that together. But that came together into a demo and a talk that I gave then, which to my knowledge is one of the first examples of GPU accelerated image processing on a mobile device. And then in the about the year, 2 years after that, I heard so many people come back and say, hey, that's an awesome example, but it isn't really extensible. It isn't something I can just drop into an application. Could you really think about, you know, maybe generalizing this, make it easier for somebody to work with? And I heard that enough, and I saw the same questions be asked day in, day out on Stack Overflow about doing this sort of thing, that I said, okay, fine. I'm just going to put together a framework, see how hard it is to do. And, you know, it came together in just a couple of weeks and put up the first version of it, which was fairly primitive. It was basically just a scaffolding for making this work and one example filter. And started that in, I think my first commit was February of 2012. In the 2 years since, it's evolved quite a ways.
So my first introduction to image processing was I wrote the Core Image section for the iOS 5 book for Ray Wenderlich. And so that kind of wet my whistle a little bit for image processing, and I got really excited. But as you say, the limitation with Core Image at the time was there was no custom kernels. You had, you know, Core Image had a set of filters. I think it was 70 or 80. They keep adding every year, but it was limited. And you could chain them together in Core Image to create new ones. But even with that, you were limited in what you could do. And so I was kind of primed when GPU Image, when you came out with that, I was like, this was exactly what I was looking for, something where I could write kind of any custom filter I wanted to. And so I use it quite a bit, and I do contract work fairly regularly for other organizations in GPU Image. So I'm a huge, huge fan of this framework. And from my perspective, it's pretty popular, but I know that you know a lot more about who's using it. Can you talk about some of the apps that are using it on the App Store? And I mean, is it fairly well used in terms of iOS apps?
Well, let's just say that I don't think it was a coincidence that about 6 months after I put this out, you saw the number of camera and photo applications kind of take a sharp jump up. it ended up, there are a lot of smaller applications. There are still very high quality applications, but you probably haven't heard of them that are being used for a variety of different applications. The standard camera filtering. I do see a lot of people that just write me and say, I want to write the next Instagram. Can I just use your thing? And so you do see a lot of that. But as far as big name projects, unfortunately, there are some that are really huge applications that you have heard of that I don't know that I can say that they're using it because they've talked to me behind the scenes about what they're looking for there. Some of them are hiring people who are, familiar with the framework, so they're looking for that. But of ones that I can talk about, YouTube's Capture application. There's a new application by Adobe, Adobe Shape CC, which goes and captures, I believe, textures and does some very interesting things there. That one just came out a few weeks ago. If I remember correctly, Evernote uses it. So there are some very large ones out there that use the framework. And again, those are the ones I can talk about. There are some that I do know about that I'm not sure if I'm – it's probably okay for me to mention them, but I'm not sure, so I'm not going to. But beyond that, it's the things that I've been really interested in are the non-traditional applications that use it for things such as there's an application that uses it to correct chromatic aberration in microscope lenses, connecting a microscope lens directly in the into the iPhone and going and doing processing to correct for optical effects there. There's one that's looking at using it for doing fluorescence measurements in polymerase chain reaction, PCR tubes for DNA amplification. And others that are using it for like sensor applications, biosensor applications, and even some very interesting machine vision stuff. I've even been contacted by several DARPA contractors for potential applications in machine vision there. So that's the kind of stuff that really fascinates me. And then there are other applications that use like fractions of the code because it's all BSD licensed. So you can pull out whatever chunks you want. I think that Cortex camera is a good example of that, where they have a process that's inspired by the framework that does super resolution processing of camera images to produce just amazing results under low light and with low resolution cameras.
So for people that are kind of enjoying what they're hearing and are curious to kind of dig into GPU Image and see what it can do, can you kind of give an overview of the components? Like, I know that there's like a video camera component and then there's like a still camera component. Can you kind of just give a quick overview of what's there and how it kind of pieces together?
Sure. Yeah, there are inputs and there are outputs, and some of them are shared. So as far as inputs and outputs that are in common, you can both feed in and extract still images, movies, and raw binary data for like general purpose GPU computation. But then you can also feed in the video from a live camera source and display that directly into a view. And so a number of different ways of going into and coming out of the framework. And the framework itself tries to encapsulate common operations with AV Foundation, with movie handling, stuff like that. So you don't have to do the same boilerplate code over and over again. If you wanted to grab from just the video camera, you can just create a GPU image video camera instance and then connect that into a filter and then just connect that filter direct to a GPU image view, which is just a standard on iOS. It's just a standard UI view. On the Mac, it's an NS OpenGL view, and just it handles it all for you. Again, the idea was to follow the kind of Apple axiom of make the common things easy and everything else possible. And so I've tried to reduce the API to be as simple as possible to get people up and going right away.
One of the coolest filters early on, I don't know if you're still as excited, is it the Kuwahara? Is that how you pronounce it?
Yeah, I believe
it makes it look like a painting. Early on, that was super slow, but the devices have come up quite a bit. Now it's pretty fast. But what filters are you the most proud of, the most excited about? I mean, you've talked a little bit about moving towards kind of machine vision, but what's exciting to you that you've done so far, and kind of can you tell us what you're kind of thinking of adding next, or if you are thinking of adding, kind of what, where you see the framework going?
So it's the Kuwahara filter is an interesting one, at least just for the kind of visual effects that it produces. But it also, as you mentioned, exposed a very interesting thing about the iOS devices and just how they've evolved over the years. That the framework itself primarily relies on what are called fragment shaders, which are little C-like programs that you run that basically run once per pixel that you have on screen. And they're run by OpenGL ES, the compiled by the compiler that's on there and run by the driver. And what's really interesting is that the fragment shading processing power of the iOS GPUs has increased by orders of magnitude over just the last several generations of devices. There are some operations for which in iPhone 5 is 100 times faster than an iPhone 4S. And in general, for a lot of fragment shading operations, you know, an iPhone 5 is 1,000 times faster than an iPhone 4. And so in just the last several years, we've seen a dramatic increase in the processing power that we have there. So something like the Kuwahara filter, which is I just basically copied, it's a desktop shader, and just kind of pasted it in, and it's horribly inefficient. But now it almost runs in real time on the modern devices. In some cases, even faster on an iOS device than on my, you know, Retina MacBook Pro with an i7. So that by itself has exposed something interesting. But as far as the filters or operations that I'm most interested in, or I've had the most interesting time with, I actually had a real lot of fun exploring Gaussian blurs. And you think, well, blurs are just kind of boring. They're just blurs. But there's actually something rather interesting in the ways of optimizing the speed of blurs. And I think this is something we all found out when iOS 7 just made Gaussian blurs everywhere, was how important they can be to a user interface, but also their impacts on performance. So I actually spent about a month just tinkering with Gaussian blurs, and I actually had a write-up on my blog about the kind of performance characteristics, the optimizations I tried, and I actually ended up writing a bit of code that actually writes shaders for you in order to do variable size Gaussian blurs. And still, I wasn't as fast as Core Image, and I couldn't figure it out until I finally realized at the very end what they were doing with a very tricky downsampling and upsampling to simulate a large area, a large radius Gaussian blur. And so even something simple like that can be very interesting to see what you learn out of it when you tinker with it. But some of the ones that I really am proud of what I have in there are I have some of the world's first implementations of a couple of different algorithms in this framework. One is a Huff transform line detector, which is a process that uses a Huff transform, which is an mathematical operation, which I'm not going to get into here, but it's actually an elegant process for picking out lines in a scene. So if you have a keyboard, it can go and pick out the edges of the keyboard and point those out as lines that are present in your scene. Now, my implementation is still a little rough. It's still a little noisy. I'm still working on it. But it's one of the first implementations of an actual research paper out of the Brno University of Technology in the Czech Republic. They had a fascinating paper there. And I saw that it could be applied to this GPU-based processing. So I actually wrote them and said, hey, I'm trying to work through the math of this. There are a couple of points that I wasn't quite sure about. And they wrote me back and they sent me all of their source code, which was on Android, but it was still just absolutely fascinating to get an instant response from a research group and have them be excited about going and incorporating something like this into something that was actually out there, was actually shipping. Another such example is the Canny Edge Detector, which is based on a PhD dissertation of Seth Hall from the Auckland University of Technology. And so he actually published an implementation of this that was fairly fast. I found a few ways to tweak it to make it even faster. But it's a fast, efficient way of running a Canny Edge Detection implementation, which is actually being used in a number of shipping applications, including things like applications which convert photos into digital comic books, or coloring books for little kids.
I was just going to jump in for those that haven't heard of edge detection, and like a lot of the apps that take a photo and turn it into a drawing, a pencil drawing or a comic drawing, their edge detection is one part of that process.
Yeah, and canny edge detection is a particularly involved process to go and not just find edges, but like fill in weak parts of it and make them solid and continuous like you'd have in a coloring book. And so we actually had an efficient implementation of that and published it. And so this is one of the first applications of that in the wild. And I actually recently had a chance to be an examiner on his actual PhD defense because of incorporating this on GPU image. So it's absolutely fascinating just, you know, the kind of connections that something like that has made. So those are the things that I'm most proud of are operations like that. And it's an area where I'm most interested.
You mentioned sort of during that the existing filters are all written in the OpenGL shader language, and I'm assuming that obviously people could contribute their own if they're familiar with that language. But for those of us that aren't, like, does GPU Image provide the ability to chain and group existing filters to be able to create new and new unique ones?
Yeah, and a lot of the more complex filter operations are actually built of smaller subunits. It's one of the things that I've actually been pleasantly surprised with is that you can build like a smaller filter and a few basic operations, and then just build off of those. Take those building blocks and combine them together into something that, like, you add something that does a Gaussian blur with something that does edge detection with something that does this, and all of a sudden you've got a good cartoon filter. And so it is fairly common for people to go and chain things together. And not a lot of the people that are building applications are actually doing their own custom shaders. They're relying on some combination of things that are already in the framework and assembling them in different configurations.
And I believe there are about 125?
I think it's about 133 at last count, but some of those are smaller operations that only exist to be parts of like image processing operations, so that they don't actually get used directly themselves.
Right, and I think one other thing that I picked up on, and correct me if I'm wrong, was that you mentioned that it didn't have to be sort of image or video that's been sent to the GPU. You could actually do some computational stuff as well, similar to OpenCL. Is that correct?
Yeah, to a limited degree. I mean, you're having to send in things. You're having to basically pack in data so that it looks like an image, where you can have, you know, RGBA channels where you might be able to encode, say, a floating point number in that, and then do your processing and then extract the raw RGBA values at the end and pull those back out. I've seen some people do this for like things like doing accelerated matrix manipulation and some other aspects like that, but it's not as generalized as something like an OpenCL, where you can just have the floating point numbers coming in, you have the computations you define in basically C, and then you pull out the results in an arbitrary data format at the end. We're still a little bit restricted into packing things into image type formats, and so while you can do some interesting general purpose GPU programming, you are still limited by the restrictions of that. And, you know, I've looked a little bit into Metal, which we could talk about a little bit later on, but to see if that allows for a little bit more there. But it still does seem like a lot of it is packing things and unpacking things from image formats.
And does GPU Image, I mean, do you sort of provide any help with that, or would that be left up to the user to do that packing and unpacking?
Yeah, I think it's all generalized, so it's whatever you're able to do on your end to go and pack it and unpack it. I don't do a lot right there because I don't have the specific applications in mind for how I would do that, how I would, you know, add those kind of capabilities. It's more of a, I'm not sure for the specific applications what I need to add than anything else.
Okay. Now, since it was announced in the summer, Swift, the raywenderlich.com site's been pushing it, you know, as hard as they can. All the new books have been written in Swift. All the new tutorials on the site are all Swift. The videos are Swift. And I'm sure a lot of people are excited by what they're hearing about GPU image, and therefore we'll have one question. Is it Swift compatible?
Yes, it is. It's one of the first things I did when I got the Xcode in June is make sure that I got it so that it was Swift compatible, which was fairly easy on the Mac side, because all it was generally required was to create to have the framework itself build as a module, so it could be pulled into a Swift project. And on the Mac side, it was already building as a standard framework, not a problem. On the iOS side, I did have to add an iOS framework target, which is, there's GPU image and GPU image framework, two different targets. One builds a static library, which is what you typically use in an Objective-C application iOS 8. And then the second target is an actual full framework target, the framework bundle, that builds as a module. And so both are the module targets are able to be pulled in no problem into Swift applications. In fact, I have two. I ship a number of sample applications with the framework, and two of them on the iOS side are Swift, and I believe there's one on the Mac side that is Swift applications that actually replicate the filter showcase application, which runs through every single filter that's in the framework. I have that available both in Objective-C and Swift variants, and so you can kind of compare and contrast that. In fact, I have an entire post that I had on my blog about things I learned in making it compatible with Swift. But yeah, you can write a 23 line of code, that's total, entire application in Swift that pulls in video from a live camera, runs through a filter, and displays it to the screen in only 23 lines of Swift code.
Fantastic, and we'll make sure that we'll put in the show notes links to your blog, because you've mentioned a few different articles, which I'm sure anybody interested in GPU image will find interesting.
Just one thing that I'd like to mention: if anybody is interested in this, you should go to GitHub and download the project. And there's specifically the filter showcase application kind of gives you a pretty good idea of what's there, and it's just ready to go. You've got like 6 or 8 different projects in there that demonstrate different things, but the filter showcase app is something you can actually, put on your phone and then show a friend, like, look at this cool app. It's pretty neat to see all that it can do.
Yeah, that one application is a load of fun. It's a great advertising tool.
Yeah. So let's see. You mentioned Metal. Let's talk a little bit about that. Are there some features of Metal that will find their way into GPU image? Are there some advantages or I know that Metal's faster, but perhaps not for the specific thing that GPU image is doing.
Yeah, so a lot of people have asked me about that ever since Metal was announced. And it's the problems that Metal solves as far as overhead, driver overhead and thread contention and some things like that, haven't been huge problems with this framework. And because, for example, I have intentionally minimized overhead. I have like a single draw call, basically, per frame that's on screen. It's all on the shader side, and so I have very little overhead in terms of the actual draw operations that are being triggered when going in and filtering things through the pipeline. And in the places where I do have overhead, there are ways of solving that with just improved operations in OpenGL ES that I think can be done right now. So for me in general, I've been very interested in Metal, but I don't think it's a huge win for the kind of project that this is. It would be fairly limiting in that it would only be iOS devices. You couldn't run things in the simulator. You couldn't run things in the Mac using that. I'd have to maintain almost two separate projects to go and incorporate these things back and forth. So for me, for what I'm doing here, I'm probably going to stay away from it. But I am tinkering with it because it does have some enhanced ways of or better ways of going and, say, uploading data from the CPU to the GPU, which is one of the bottlenecks when going and working with images, with raw data sources, things like that you have on the CPU and you want to get on the GPU. That's actually one of the slowest parts of the process when working with things right now is going and feeding that raw information in there. Although usually the bottleneck is that with, say, a still image, if you bring it in as a UI image, you have to redraw it using Core Graphics into a bitmap and then send that bitmap up. That actual redrawing process is the real bottleneck. So You know, I've actually examined other ways of going and pulling like raw images in using a different say image parsing library to go and pull them right into binary data to upload immediately. But you know, maybe Metal can go and help in those areas. But for now, I don't see a great benefit for a project like this. For something like, you know, an Unreal Engine, for a Unity Engine, yeah, that's going to be a huge win for a lot of people. And a lot of people are going to benefit without even having to rewrite any code when using those engines. But for an image processing app framework like this, it probably isn't going to be something that I'm going to use right away.
So one last question. GPU image, you can use it. You can it will interoperate with other apps that are using OpenGLES. But could you use it with something like, say, SceneKit?
I don't know. I haven't gone that far to work with it. There are some ways you can deal with it with SceneKit. Yeah, it's for example, SceneKit can use an SCN renderer, which can render an entire scene into an OpenGLES texture. And I've used that before to render, say, a scene from two different viewpoints and then run a chromatic aberration and a barrel distortion filter on them to go and take a SceneKit scene and make it compatible with the Oculus Rift, the virtual reality headset. And so I've done that before. So you could theoretically take that same texture and pull it into a GPU image and go and do processing after that point, or do processing with GPU image, get a texture out of it, and then feed that texture into something like a SceneKit. So yeah, I think you probably could interoperate those two.
Okay, guys, I'm just conscious of the time, so I think that's probably a good place to wrap things up. Brad, thanks again for joining us. It's been really insightful, and I'm sure a lot of people listening are going to be quite excited about GPU image now and sort of the possibilities that are out there. And guys, that's it for another episode. As always, if you have any questions or feedback, then please don't hesitate to get in touch via podcast@raywenderlich.com. And if you enjoyed this episode, then please do leave a review on iTunes. We hope you enjoyed this podcast. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you again next time.
And that's a wrap. Thanks again, everybody, for listening to the RayWenderlich.com podcast. We hope you enjoyed it. And don't forget to leave a rating on iTunes. See you next time.